wrist, she saw only the darkest form, his face obscured. Perhaps her lens couldn't see him, was watching from a different angle. As she tracked his shape on her wrist, he backed away and walked off into the shadows. Meanwhile, Georgia had been nattering about the shark and what they'd witnessed, and May hadn't caught any of it. But now she was standing atop her ladder, waving, hoping that May was finished, because she had nothing left to feed the animal. The show was over. "Okay, then," May said, thankful for the chance to get away and to follow Calden. She said goodbye and thanks to Georgia and walked briskly through the dark hallway. She caught sight of his silhouette leaving through a faraway door, and she picked up her pace, careful not to shake her lens or call out. The door he'd slipped through led to the newsroom, which would be a logical enough place for May to be visiting next. "Let's see what's going on in the newsroom," she said, knowing all within would be aware of her approach and the 20 steps it would take her to get there. She also knew that the sea change cameras in the hallway, over the doorway, would have caught Calden, and she'd know sooner or later if it was actually him. Every movement within the circle was caught on one camera or another, usually three, and reconstructing anyone's movements, after the fact, was only a few minutes' work. As she approached the newsroom door, May thought of Calden's hands upon her, his hands reaching low, pulling himself into her. She heard the low rumble of his voice, his taste like some wet, fresh fruit. What if she found him? She couldn't take him to the bathroom, or could she? She would find a way. She opened the door to the newsroom, a wide space Bailey had modeled on old-time newspaper offices, with 100 low cubicles, news tickers, and clocks everywhere, each desk with a retro analog telephone, a row of white buttons below the numbers, blinking arrhythmically. There were old printers, fax machines, telex devices, letter presses. The decor, of course, was for show. All the retro machines were non-functional. The news gatherers, whose faces were now upon May, smiling, saying hello to her and her watchers, were able to do most of their reporting via sea change. There were now over 100 million cameras functional and accessible around the world, making in-person reporting unnecessarily expensive and dangerous, to say nothing of the carbon expenditures. As May walked through the newsroom, the staff waved to her, unsure if this was an official visit. May waved back, scanning the room, knowing she appeared distracted. Where was Calden? There was only one other exit, so May rushed to the room, nodding and greeting until she came to the door on the far end. She opened it, flinching at the bright light of day, and saw him. He was crossing the wide green lawn, passing the new sculpture by that Chinese dissident. She remembered she should highlight it soon, maybe even today. And just then he turned briefly, as if checking to see if May was still following. Her eyes met his, provoking a tiny smile, before he turned again and walked quickly around the period of five dynasties. "Where are you headed?" the voice in her ear asked. "Sorry, no place, I was just... never mind." May was allowed, of course, to go where she pleased. Her meanderings were what so many watchers appreciated most, but the additional guidance office still liked to check in from time to time. As she stood in the sunlight, circlers all around, she heard her phone ring. She checked her wrist. There was no caller identified. She knew it could only be Calden. "Hello?" she said. "We have to meet," he said. "Excuse me?" she asked. "Your watchers can't hear me. They only hear you. Right now, your engineers are wondering why the incoming audio isn't working. They'll fix it in a few minutes." His voice was tense, shaky. "So listen, most of what's happening must stop. I'm serious. The circle is almost complete. In May, you have to believe me that this will be bad for you, for me, for humanity. When can we meet? If it has to be in the bathroom, that's fine with me." May hung up. "Sorry about that," said AG through her earpiece. "Somehow the incoming audio wasn't working. We're working on it. Who was it?" May knew she couldn't lie. She wasn't sure if anyone had indeed heard Calden. "Some lunatic," May improvised, proud of herself, "babbling about the end of the world." May checked her wrist. Already people were wondering what had happened and how. The most popular zing, "Tech problems at Circle HQ? Next, Santa forgets Christmas?" "Tell them the truth, as always," AG said. "Okay, I have no idea what just happened," May said aloud. "When I do, I'll let you all know." but she was shaken. She was still standing, in the sunlight, waving occasionally to circlers noticing her. She knew her watchers might wonder what was happening next, where she was going. She didn't want to check her wrist, knowing that the comments would be perplexed and even concerned. Off in the distance, she saw what looked like a game of croquet and, alighting on an idea, she made her way to it. "Now, as you all know," she said when she was close enough to see and wave to the four players, who she realized were two circlers and a pair of visitors from Russia, "we do not always play here at the circle. Sometimes we have to work, which this group is demonstrating. I don't want to disturb them, but I can assure you that what they're doing involves problem-solving and complex algorithms and will result in the improving of the products and services we can provide to you. Let's soak this in." That would give her a few minutes to think. Periodically, she would focus her lens on something like this, a game or demonstration or speech, and this might allow her mind to wander while the watchers watched. She checked the view on her wrist and saw that her watchers, 432,028, were within the average, and there were no urgent comments, so she permitted herself 3 minutes before she had to retake control of the feed. With a wide smile, for she was surely visible on 3 or 4 outdoor sea changes, she took a breath. This was a new skill she'd acquired, the ability to look to the outside world utterly serene and even cheerful, while, in her skull, all was chaos. She wanted to call Annie, but she couldn't call Annie. She wanted Calden. She wanted to be alone with Calden. She wanted to be back in that bathroom, sitting on him, feeling the crown of him push through. But he was not normal. He was some kind of spy here, some kind of anarchist, doomsayer. What had he meant when he warned of the completion of the circle? She didn't even know what completion meant. No one did. The wise men had recently begun to hint about it, though. One day, in new tiles all over campus, cryptic messages had appeared. "Think completion," and "complete the circle," and "the circle must be whole." And these slogans had stirred up the desired intrigue, but no one knew what it meant, and the wise men weren't telling. May checked the time. She'd been watching the croquet match for 90 seconds. She could only reasonably hold this pose for another minute or two. So what was her responsibility to report this call? Had anyone actually heard what Calden had said? What if they had? What if this was some kind of test to see if she'd report a rogue call? Maybe this was part of completion, a test like this to measure her loyalty, to thwart anyone or anything that would impede completion. Oh, shit, she thought. She wanted to talk to Annie, but she knew she couldn't. She thought of her parents, who would give good counsel, but their house was transparent, too, full of sea change cameras, a condition of her father's treatment. Maybe she could go there, meet them in the bathroom. No. She hadn't actually been in touch with them for a few days. They had warned her they were having some technical difficulties, would be back in touch soon, that they loved her, and then hadn't answered any of her messages for the last 48 hours. And in that time, she hadn't checked the cameras in their house. She had to do that. She made a mental note. Maybe she could call them, make sure they were okay, and then hint, somehow, that she wanted to talk to them about something very unsettling and personal? No, this was all mad. She'd gotten a random call from a man she now knew to be nuts. Oh, shit, she thought, hoping no one could guess at the chaos in her mind. She relished being where she was, visible like this, a conduit like this, a guide to her watchers, but this responsibility, this unnecessary intrigue, it crippled her. And when she felt this paralysis, caught between entirely too many possibilities and unknowns, there was only one place she felt right. At 1:44, May entered the Renaissance, felt above her the greeting of the slowly turning Calder, and took the elevator to the fourth floor. Just rising through the building calmed her. Walking down the catwalk, the atrium visible below, brought her great peace. This customer experience was home, where there were no unknowns. At first, May had been surprised when they'd asked her to continue working at least a few hours a week at CE. She'd enjoyed her time there, yes, but she assumed transparency would mean she'd leave that far behind. "That's exactly the point," Bailey had explained. "I think, number one, it'll keep you connected with the ground-level work you did here. Number two, I think your followers and viewers will appreciate you continuing to do this essential work. It'll be a very moving act of humility, don't you think?" May was at once aware of the power she wielded. Instantly, she became one of the three most visible circlers, and determined to wear it lightly. So May had found time in each week to return to her old pod and to her old desk, which they'd left vacant. There had been changes made. There were now 9 screens, and the CEs were encouraged to be delving far deeper with their clients, to reciprocate in far-reaching ways. But the work was essentially the same, and May found that she appreciated the rhythm of it, the almost meditative quality of doing something she knew in her bones, and she found herself being drawn to CE at times of stress or calamity. And so, in her 3rd week of transparency, on a sunny Wednesday, she planned on putting in 90 minutes at CE before the rest of the day overtook her. At 3, she had to give a tour of the Napoleonic era, where they were modeling the elimination of physical money. The trackability of internet currency would eliminate huge swaths of crime overnight. And at 4, she was supposed to highlight the new musicians' residences on campus, 22 fully equipped apartments where musicians, especially those who couldn't count on making a living through sales of their music, could live for free and play regularly for the Circlers. That would take her through the afternoon. At 5, she was supposed to attend an announcement from the latest politician to go clear. Why they continued to make these proclamations with fanfare, they were now calling them clarifications, was a mystery to her and many of her watchers. There were tens of thousands of clear elected officials all over the country and world, and the movement was less a novelty and more of an inevitability. Most observers predicted full governmental transparency, at least in democracies, and with sea change, there would soon be no other kind, within 18 months. After the clarification, there was an improv comedy battle on campus, a fundraiser for a school in rural Pakistan, a wine tasting, and finally, an all-campus barbecue with music by a Peruvian trance choir. May walked into her old pod room, where her own words, "Secrets are lies, sharing is caring, privacy is theft," had been cast in steel and dominated an entire wall. The place was bursting with newbies, all of whom looked up, alarmed and happy to see her there among them. She waved to them, gave them a theatrical faux curtsy, saw Jared standing in the doorway to his office, and waved at him too. Then, determined to do her work without fanfare, May sat down, logged on, and opened the chute. She answered 3 queries in rapid succession, with an average of 99. Her 4th client was the first to notice that it was May, transparent May, handling her query. "I'm watching you," the client, a media buyer for a sporting goods importer in New Jersey, wrote. Her name was Janice, and she couldn't get over the fact she could watch May typing the answer to her query in real time on her screen right next to where she was receiving May's typed answer. "Hall of Mirrors," she wrote. After Janice, May had a series of clients who did not know it was her answering their queries, and May found that this bothered her. One of them, a t-shirt distributor from Orlando named Nancy, asked her to join her professional network, and May readily agreed. Jared had told her about a new level of reciprocation encouraged among the CE staff. "If you send a survey, be prepared to answer one yourself." And so, after she joined the Orlando t-shirt distributor's professional network, she got another message from Nancy. She asked May to respond to a short questionnaire about her preferences in casual apparel, and May agreed. She linked to the questionnaire, which she realized was not short. It encompassed fully 120 questions. But May was happy to answer them, feeling her opinion mattered and was being heard, and this kind of reciprocation would engender loyalty from Nancy and all who Nancy came into contact with. After she answered the survey questions, Nancy sent her a profuse thank you and told her she could choose the t-shirt of her choice, and directed May to her consumer site. May said she would choose at a later time, but Nancy wrote back, telling May that she could not wait to see which shirt May would choose. May checked her clock. She'd been on the Orlando query for 8 minutes, far surpassing the new guideline per query, which was 2.5. May knew she would have to power through the next 10 or so queries to get back to an acceptable average. She went to Nancy's site, chose a shirt that featured a cartoon dog in a superhero costume, and Nancy told her that it was a great choice. May then took the next query and was in the process of an easy boilerplate conversion when another message came from Nancy. "Sorry to be missensitive, but after I invited you to choose my professional network, you didn't ask me to join your professional network. And though I know I'm just a nobody in Orlando, I felt like I had to tell you that it made me feel devalued." May told Nancy she had no intentions of making her feel devalued, that things were just busy at the Circle, and that she had spaced on this essential reciprocation, which she quickly remedied. May finished her next query, got a 98, and was following up on that one when she got another message from Nancy. "Did you see my message on the professional network?" May looked at all her feeds and saw no message from Nancy. "I posted it on the message board of your professional network," she said. And so May went to that page, which she didn't visit often, and saw that Nancy had written, "Hello, stranger." May typed, "Hello yourself, but you're no stranger," and thought for a moment that that would mean the end of their exchange, but she paused on the page, briefly, with a sense that Nancy was not quite finished, and she wasn't. "So glad you wrote back. Thought you might be offended that I called you stranger. Promise you weren't peeved?" May promised Nancy that she was not peeved, answered with an XO, sent her 10 subsequent smiles, and went back to her queries, hoping that Nancy was satisfied and happy and that they were cool. She took 3 more queries, she followed up with surveys, and saw that her average was at 99. This provoked a flurry of congratulatory zings, watchers happy to see May's commitment, still, to the day-to-day tasks at the Circle, and essential to the operation of the world. So many of her watchers, they reminded her, were working at desk jobs too, and because she continued to do this work, voluntarily and with evident joy, they saw her as a role model and inspiration. And this felt good. This felt truly valuable to May. The customers made her better, and serving them while transparent made her far better. She expected this. She was apprised by Stuart that when thousands or even millions are watching, you perform your best self. You are cheerier, more positive, more polite, more generous, more inquisitive. But he had not told her of the smaller, improving alterations to her behavior. The first time the camera redirected her actions was when she went to the kitchen for something to eat. The image on her wrist showed the interior of the refrigerator as she scanned for a snack. Normally, she would have grabbed a chilled brownie, but seeing the image of her hand reaching for it and seeing what everyone else would be seeing, she pulled back. She closed the fridge, and from the bowl on the counter, she selected a packet of almonds and left the kitchen. Later that day, a headache appeared, caused, she thought, by eating less chocolate than usual. She reached into her bag, where she kept a few single-serving aspirin packets, but again, on her screen, she saw what everyone was seeing. She saw a hand searching her bag, clawing, and instantly she felt desperate and wretched, like some kind of pill-popping addict. She did without. Every day she'd done without things she didn't want to want, things she didn't need. She'd given up soda, energy drinks, processed foods. At Circle social events, she nursed one drink only and tried each time to leave it unfinished. Anything immoderate would provoke a flurry of zings of concern, so she stayed within the bounds of moderation, and she found it freeing. She was liberated from bad behavior. She was liberated from doing things she didn't want to be doing, eating and drinking things that did her no good. Since she'd gone transparent, she'd become more noble. People called her a role model. Mothers said their daughters looked up to her, and this gave her more a feeling of responsibility, and that feeling of responsibility to the Circlers, to their clients and partners, to the youth who saw inspiration in her, kept her grounded and fueled her days. She was reminded of the Circle's own survey questions, and she put on her survey headset and got started. To her watchers, she was expressing her opinions constantly, yes, and felt far more influential than before, but something about the tidy rhythm and call-and-response nature of the surveys felt missing. She took another customer query and then nodded. The distant bell rang. She nodded. "Thank you. Are you happy with the state of airport security?" "Smile," May said. "Thank you. Would you welcome change in airport security procedures?" "Yes." "Thank you. Does the state of airport security dissuade you from flying more often?" "Yes." "Thank you." The questions continued, and she was able to get through 94 of them before she allowed herself to lapse. Soon, the voice arrived, unchanged. "May?" She ignored it on purpose. "May?" Her name, spoken by her voice, continued to hold its power over her, and she hadn't discovered why. "May?" It sounded, this time, like some purer version of herself. "May?" She looked down to her bracelet, seeing a number of zings, asking if she was okay. She knew she had to respond, lest her watchers think she'd lost her mind. This was one of the many small adjustments she had to get